about what an administration's priorities are from those budgets. So what does the Trump administration prioritize? Defunding the Special Olympics, cutting Medicaid, another program which benefits those with disabilities, and Medicare, and Social Security, including disability insurance, and SNAP, the food stamps program, and the EPA budget, and the student loan forgiveness program. So what does the Trump administration want to fund? Well, the budget increases defense spending by $34 billion, and of course it allocates $8.6 billion to build a wall along the southern border. Remember that one that Mexico was going to pay for? Again, the primary purpose of a president's budget proposal is to send a message to the country. And apparently President Trump wants us to be the country that cuts funding for the poor and the vulnerable and the hungry and the sick and the indebted and now the Special Olympics.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 292. I want to thank everybody so much for being here. So we took a little bit of time off. We had a few things we had to do. Of course, it was tax season. I imagine a lot of you got your taxes done. If you didn't get them done, I'm sure you went ahead and filed for those extensions. So there was a poll that came out recently. I believe it was an Ipsos Reuters poll. And they asked folks, they said, so the tax breaks, right? The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that was passed by the GOP Congress and signed by a GOP president. Did your gigantic tax cut, which is supposed to be what? $3,000 or $4,000 or $2,000, anyway, somewhere in the thousands of dollars for families. Did you see that? Somewhere in the neighborhood of about 17% of people said that they saw some tax cut or the tax cut they were expecting. I've got my doubts about that number, 17%. But the overwhelming majority, over 80% said no. We don't know what the hell they just passed. Now, when you look at any poll right now, the one thing that you'll notice straight away is that they usually, whenever it's the folks that are on the side of the president, it comes in around 30-some percent, 33, 35%. They'll say the rest of the country feels like this. And then 30-some percent feel like this. Well, the rest of the country feels like that. And then 30-some percent feel like that. And so what you have there are your hardcore Trumpers, your fans, as they were, the ones who believe that Donald Trump can do no wrong. So the fun thing about this particular poll is somebody somewhere out there is admitting that, you know what, I'm a Trumper. And I didn't get a tax break. The tax breaks, obviously, were only supposed to be for the wealthy. And tax season was, well, for me as an individual and as a business owner, yeah, pretty brutal. I paid a lot more this year than I paid last year. But I'm going to be okay because obviously I'm of means. But what about the folks that are not of means? So there were any number of these stories that came out before the election. Okay, of all the folks that were doing their taxes, and oh my God, they realize that they're getting so much less back of their taxes, or they're having to pay. So one lady in New York got a $5,000 return last year, got to pay $10,000 this year. My. Whatever. Well, yeah, and it's so, and there's a feeling that happens. So we use a tax software. And we do our taxes at home, ourselves. I've mentioned this before. We pick a Saturday, a couple weeks before they're due. You know, that way we've got plenty of time to work out some things if we need to. Getting this paperwork and that paperwork, the supporting documents. We do the green eye shades. We sit there and we're miserable, but we do them. And the first thing you do is you punch in all the money you made. I punch in my wife's, you know, or she does a lot of the keying in. And then we punch in mine, and then we punch in the business, and then there's a total on the screen, and every single time that that initial total that we owe to the government comes up on the screen, I choke a little bit. My God, what is that? It's fine. Taxes are what we pay to live in a civilized society. So I know I'm going to end up owing something. I've owed something for the last, 10 years or so. And that's okay, because that means that my income has gone up and I'm doing fine. But when I first see that number, it just stops my heart. And then we put in our deductions, get that number down a little bit, cut a check to the government. Bob's your uncle. Move on. We'll see you again next year. Same table, green eye shades and all the rest. You goddamn right, baby. Let's do this again next year. We go out. We have a pint afterwards. We celebrate. Taxes are done. Let's move on to something more engaging and much more important. But that initial feeling doesn't last long. But what if that initial feeling, you know, and if you've done your own taxes, you know what I'm talking about. What if that initial feeling doesn't go away? And that number on the screen doesn't get any smaller. But let's say maybe you actually end up on the good side and you're due a refund, right? And then you wait a few weeks or whatever for it to be directly deposited in your account or for a check to come in the mail. You were due money, you know, unlike most Americans who got just jackholed by this GOP tax scam. But you were due some money. You just wait for it and then it never comes. And then you get a piece of mail one day. Holy crap! It's from the IRS. This has got to be my check. And then you open it, and there's no check. Wow. So, the headline over at CNBC, so now we're not talking about the people that, you know, did their taxes before tax day. We're talking about the after tax day when those who were due a refund, the very few who were lucky enough to be due a refund, are now supposed to be getting their checks. The headline here, the government took a single mom's $3,000 tax refund to cover her student loans. And now she's trying to get it back. See, tax refunds for a lot of folks, and I remember this growing up, are a lifeline for many low-income people. And for the increasing number of people who have fallen behind on student loans, their tax returns are now just being taken from them. Borrowers can try to get the money back, but it's not an easy process. Quoting here, as she scanned the letters black type, Alexis Patterson felt herself go numb. That's the feeling I felt. The U.S. Department of Treasury applied all or part of your payment to a delinquent debt that you owe, it read. Patterson stopped reading. One thing mattered now. The single mother would not receive her $3,000 tax refund, which included her child tax credit. The government would instead apply the whole money to her past due loan account. She and her 11-year-old daughter, Ophelia, have been homeless over the last few months here in Portland, Oregon. Her refund, she hoped, would find them a place to stay. Everything just fell out from underneath me, Patterson said. The student debt crisis has some asking if college is even worth the cost. Tax refunds are a lifeline for many people. The average check from the IRS in 2019 so far is $2,795, which represents 6 weeks of income for the typical family in the U.S. and the largest cash infusion 1 in 3 households will see all year. For the increasing number of people who have fallen behind on their student loans, however, that relief never comes. The U.S. government has extraordinary collection powers on federal debts, and it can seize borrowers' tax refunds and earn income and child tax credits, as well as their wages, and even take their Social Security. This year, the U.S. government has already taken $3.3 billion from 1.4 million student loan borrowers' federal tax refunds, compared with $2.3 billion from 1.2 million borrowers in 2016, according to data provided to CNBC by the U.S. Treasury Tax Department. It also pulled 48.6 million this year from 91,000 borrower state tax refunds, up to 35.2 million from 70,000 borrowers in 2016. Patterson is now scrambling to get her refund back and is likely just going to have to remain homeless. And they say, hey, this is the price that you pay. So I have a question for everyone. this tax scam that got passed, you got screwed. I understand that the GOP does a fabulous job of doing this sell job about how much they care for you and how they're just going to bring you freedom and how they're going to protect your guns. And goddammit, that's what's important to you, is protecting those freaking guns. Not helping Alexis and Ophelia, who are living on the streets of Portland, where this $3,000 could have gotten her an apartment, where she would have then had an address that she could then put on a job application that, you know, could eventually lead to a job, which could have led to Alexis and Ophelia getting off the streets. Instead, because she decided to go to school and decided to try to better herself, the GOP saw an opportunity in people that want to better themselves. So they took your damn tax refund away and you keep voting for them. And then, after they had taken all your money from you because you decided to go to school. See, there was a bill that was passed back during the Bush administration, you know, the last Republican administration that you let F you over. And it gave extraordinary powers to the banks to just kill you on these student loans. And the kids don't think about it because they're fed another dream, especially by the for-profit colleges that really, really, really just want you to take out those loans. So here's the way it works. The schools realize that you can take out as much money as you want, and it's all going to be in your name. They want that money. Done. So then they sell you the dream. Take out as much money as you want. You're going to make it all back in spades when you get a job with your education. And so you go and you borrow the money. That money comes from a bank. The bank has zero risk. Think about that. An investment with zero risk because the government backstops all the loans. If you don't pay them, well, then the taxpayer will pay for it. And that's the sweetheart deal that they got during the Bush administration. Oh, and that school loan, that debt that you have, yeah. You can never, ever, ever, ever discharge that, not even through bankruptcy. Oh, wait. And when the Republicans took over Congress in 2010, they doubled your rates. Yeah. Yeah, they doubled your student loan rates because, you know, freedom. I just have to ask. For how many people is this working out for? And another question, why? Why do we keep doing this to ourselves?
Victoria Pearl Wright says she used to look forward to filing her taxes.
Typically, I enjoy tax season just because it's easy for me to do and we typically get a refund. So I get it done as soon as possible.
But this year, instead of getting back the $5,000 Wright was expecting and that she and her husband got last year, the Houston mom found they actually owed the government money.
I called my husband immediately, crying. I was in a large amount of distress at that point because it's almost traumatizing.
With the birth of new daughter Olivia just 3 weeks ago, Wright says her family was counting on a tax refund to cover the cost of her unpaid maternity leave. Wright is one of millions of Americans for whom tax season 2019 has been a source of surprise and disappointment. According to NerdWallet, 59% of Americans who have filed a federal tax return so far have reported smaller refunds this year than last year.
6% of taxpayers are going to get a tax increase. But 6% of taxpayers in the United States, it's a big number. It's almost 10 million people.
Wright, who manages a coffee house, says that although she and her husband make less than $50,000, under new tax laws, they don't qualify for an earned income credit, and they're no longer able to claim the personal deductions they claimed last year. She is among those taxpayers for whom the change in the tax code is a very big deal. Who else is feeling the squeeze? Well, those living in higher tax areas. Under old tax code, taxpayers could deduct state and local taxes, known as SALT, at tax time. But the new law caps the SALT deduction at $10,000 per household. And then there are employees who get a W-2 form and routinely knocked off work-related expenses, stuff they had to buy for their job, ranging from travel costs to union dues. Under new tax laws, they can no longer claim those deductions. President Trump has argued that the new tax code his administration enacted has benefited millions.
With the tax cuts the biggest in the history of our country, tax cuts with people having a lot more money in their pocket.
And Donald Trump Jr. has defended new tax laws, tweeting that, of course, refunds are down, people are paying less in taxes, and the code is simplified. A refund means you overpaid. As for Wright, she says she and her husband are still trying to figure out what they're going to do about a lack of tax refund. To make ends meet, she's now started a PayPal Me fund and made the difficult decision to return to work later this week, 4 weeks earlier than she had originally planned.
We were really banking on the refund because we, you know, we live paycheck to paycheck. We can't, in a sense, save as of right now.
So this is only one in a number of scams that we continue to keep getting taken by when it comes to putting these folks in office. Now, the case that I'm making isn't that you should just, you know, take your ballot and run blue straight through. No, that's not the thing. But understand this. If they got an R next to their name, you better learn a little bit more about them. And if you hear them complaining about the government, just remember that they're not there to help. They're there to screw you over. See, when Ronald Reagan had his famous line, I'm the worst words in the English language, are the, I'm here for the government, I'm here to help you. What that means is that anybody, what that honestly means is that anybody that says that they hate the government can't do anything right, what they're saying is if you put them in charge, if you give them a job in the government, they are going to F you over.
Uber in 2014, they launched this whole campaign recruiting teachers, no other profession,
right.
Recruiting teachers. And I interviewed a teacher who drove Uber. She said when people from other countries got into her car and found out that she was a teacher with a master's degree, they were incredulous. They were horrified. And when Americans got into her car and found out that she had a teacher's degree, they said, what a great job for a teacher. So we've normalized this. 46% of teachers leave within 5 years. It is so expensive to have that kind of turnover. And to Senator Kamala's point, mostly minority students are the ones that have the impact of that horrific turnover.
So what we have done is devalued education and devalued it a lot. We have said that if you want to get a higher education, you're going to pay. And if you decide that you want to work in the public school system, which the GOP is openly trying to kill right now, just as a part, as a facet of their anti-intellectualism, well, they're just going to screw you over. See, you can learn a lot about a culture. You can learn a lot about a society by how they treat the most vulnerable among them and how they treat their teachers. And what we have done is we have routinely just screwed over our educators. I walked a picket line earlier this year with my wife, and well, we got what we wanted by walking that picket line. But now there's a whole bunch of teacher layoffs happening in our state. Now, our governor, who is incidentally running for president, has not been great when it comes to education. So it likely will not surprise you that I am not backing my governor for president of the United States. I'm glad that he cares about the earth, but that's not enough for me because my governor, he's been great on some things, but he's not been great when it comes to teachers. And in Spokane alone, the city I used to live in, they're looking at hundreds of layoffs for teachers. So what are they going to do with all those students? Class sizes are just going to have to explode. And your student that needs attention, you know, you can't have gigantic classrooms. Your student that needs more attention, any more attention, just isn't going to get it. And part of the way we got here, obviously, is President Donald Trump. And of course, right behind that followed good old Betsy DeVos.
I want to follow up on the thing Ms. Lee mentioned about the cuts to Special Olympics. Do you know how many kids are going to be affected by that cut, Madam Secretary?
Mr. Pocan, let me just say again, we had to make some difficult decisions with this budget.
Again, this is a question on how many kids, not about the budget.
I don't know the number of kids.
It's 272,000 kids. I'll answer for you. That's okay. No problem. It's 272,000 kids that are affected.
Special Olympics is an awesome organization, one that is well supported by the philanthropic sector as well.
Sure.
That sounds good, doesn't it? The philanthropic sector. Remember? Remember when we thought it was a good idea to put babies in jail and to strip the money from Special Olympics? Hey, America, that's what you voted for. Who am I to judge? Okay, so here I go getting all judgy. So the headline over at Truth Dig, written by Jeff Bryant, charter schools are scamming the U.S. government. Charter schools. So what is that? So the charter school. So just about anybody can put together a proposal for opening a charter school. And what they do is they simply submit that paperwork to the government. And then they get a grant. Of course, that grant money comes from public education. See, in the new budget, they've stripped a bunch of money out of public education and put it into charter school education. Why? Well, there are no standards for charter schools. Your teachers don't have to be accredited. You don't have to be a real school. You could have Jesus school. You could just teach Jesus all day. Or you could teach them nothing. It's effectively whatever their parents will tolerate. So if their parents are a bunch of ignorant fox bots who spend all of their time consuming conservative media, and then they show up and you plop those kids in front of Fox News all day, if the parents are cool with it, then that's legit. And they're going to get money. You say, Melvin, that's crap. The government would come in. They would see that. They would stop giving them money. No, that's not true. When I say zero standards, I mean zero standards. Let's talk about the ghost schools. So according to the article, billions, billions with a B, have been scammed out of the government for schools that either immediately closed after they opened or schools that never opened at all. And these grants are exactly that. They're grants. They never have to be paid back. So you put together a proposal. You submit it to the Department of Education. They give you a grant. And here's another thing. And this has happened in several cases where the school was not even built. Brick one wasn't even laid. And they went ahead and said, hey, we need more money for our charter school. And they got the money again. Now, eventually, you have to show some sort of results. And when it comes time for results, you simply say, oh, we weren't able to open the school. This, that, or the other. The government screwed us over. Oh, well. And then you just get to walk away with your money. So we're laying off teachers right now, legit teachers with master's degrees who are already getting effed over the second that they become a teacher. We're taking money from them. They have to drive for Uber. You know, they got to sell blood and all this other crap. And the money that we've taken from them, we're just going to go ahead and just give that. We're just going to go ahead and give that away to these scam artists. And there's no one really checking up on this stuff. And Betsy DeVos isn't going to check up on it. Hell, she wants Jesus School. $4 billion. $4 billion. And counting. And in the new Trump budget, not that it'll pass, in the new Trump budget, they're asking for even more money for the ghost schools.
And so when you hear a Betsy DeVos basically say, let's dismantle the funding for kids that really need it, and then at the same time have invest hugely in private schools, what she's trying to do is put her finger on the scales to actually dismantle public education and try to force parents to actually use private schools. But what you're seeing is the, you know, you're seeing the 20 years of underinvestment in education. You're seeing that 25 states still spend less on public education than they did before the recession. 41 spend less on higher education. Teachers are taking more and more out of their pocket, and they're actually getting paid less and less compared to similarly situated professionals.
You can't have a bunch of people getting educated, because then you'll have a bunch of thinking people, and those thinking people are far more likely to vote for somebody that's not the Republicans, and we can't have that. So it's about a couple of things. It's about keeping people stupid. It's about stripping money out of the public budget, out of the public dome, making sure that you don't benefit from the tax dollars you pay. It's also about a very virulent strain of anti-intellectualism. Quoting here from an article by Quadrico's Bernard Driscoll over at The Hill, I recently started reading a book, The Death of Expertise, The Campaign Against Expertise, and Why It Matters by Harvardian Tom Nichols. The thesis of his work is that skepticism towards intellectual authority runs deep in the American character, and that the relationship between experts and citizens in the American Republic is collapsing, and what all of us citizens and experts might do about it. To reject the advice of experts is to assert autonomy, a way for Americans to insulate their increasingly fragile ego from being told that they're wrong about anything. Nichols writes, "This sentiment and feeling is in part what catapulted Trump into the presidency. There is an air of anti-establishment, anti-institutions, anti-history, and anti-tradition, and most of the anti-intellectualism in the public consciousness today. Most Americans, characteristically and perhaps unfairly situated in rural areas, seem not to concern themselves with facts anymore, but approach so-called experts with suspicion and fear. The idea that the country does not need experts is the kind of illusion we indulge ourselves in until something terrible happens. Everybody wants to second guess their physician or accountant until their fever hits 104 or the IRS audits them. If we do not need expertise in our society, then why do we push kids for post-secondary options to either critically think and learn, apply for apprenticeships, and etc.? To ultimately become experts in their field of choice. Lawyers, doctors, plumbers, electricians, and even preachers and pastors have engaged in specialized education and practical training to prove themselves prepared, even by established standards worthy of a professional claim. Failure of competent execution of services and practices engaged by such professionals on behalf of non-expert clients can have dire consequences." I have a question for you. If, let's say, the foundation — and by the way, foundations are notoriously expensive to fix. That's the thing your house sits on, that bedrock, that big slab of concrete your house sits on. But let's say it's got some cracks and it's threatening your entire house. And what do you do? Well, you got to find a foundation guy. You might have to make a homeowner's insurance claim, but we're not going to get into that. But you got to find a foundation guy. So what do? You start looking for reviews. Why? Because you want the best one. Why? Because it's your foundation. Why? Because it's your goddamn house, and the whole thing could come down. You could lose your whole investment. But since you're not into expertise, since you don't like experts, since you don't like people that know their stuff, maybe you could hire Bob, your next door neighbor. He'll show up with some dynamite, and hey, why don't question him? He knows what he's doing. He doesn't need facts. Just let him reset the foundation of your house with dynamite. Who the hell are you to question Bob? I know it sounds ridiculous, but they're proud. Conservatives, a lot of conservative voters, they are absolutely upside down and inside out proud of their ignorance. We know that climate change is real. 100% of scientists who are not taking money from the fossil fuel industry, 100% of them say it's real, it's man-made, it's happening now, and something must be done about it. But even with that, that does not stop a United States senator from going to the floor and saying things like this, and saying them quite proudly.
"I rise today to consider the Green New Deal with the seriousness it deserves." This is, of course, a picture of former President Ronald Reagan naturally firing a machine gun while riding on the back of a dinosaur. This image has as much to do with overcoming communism in the 20th century as the Green New Deal has to do with overcoming climate change in the 21st. The Green New Deal calls essentially for the elimination of airplanes. In a future without air travel, how are we supposed to get around the vast expanses of, say, Alaska during the winter? Well, I'll tell you how. Tauntauns, Mr. President. This is a beloved species of reptomammals native to the ice planet of Hoth. All residents of Hawaii would be left with is this. This is a picture of Aquaman, a superhero from the undersea kingdom of Atlantis, and notably here, a founding member of the Super Friends.
That's a real thing. So that's Mike Lee from Utah going to the floor to talk about the Green New Deal. And by the way, saying zero, upside down and inside out, nothing. Saying absolutely nothing. Nothing about the Green New Deal. That kind of BS that he went to the floor with, that just got love from every corner of every conservative group everywhere. They just thought that it was awesome. And he showed those facty McFackers showing up without his facts when they got facts. You go, Mike Lee. And that's, they're so effing proud of this stuff.
I just want to thank all of the incredible men and women who have done such a great job in helping with Florence. This is a tough hurricane. One of the wettest we've ever seen from the standpoint of water.
So that's a clip from the President of the United States. Get in the Wayback Machine with me. Think if it is 20 years ago or 30 years ago or 40 or 50 years ago. And I come to you from the future. And I say that this is an audio clip of your president saying about how this hurricane was the wettest ever from the standpoint of water. This is not just an elected official. This is the elected official. This is the future. You would sock me. You would knock me to flip out. Ain't no way. No, America wouldn't do that. And I say, no. Not just that. I'm going to do you one better. The guy is also a white supremacist. He's a Nazi sympathizer. You know, did we not just win World War II? Did we not just rescue Germany? There's no way we would elect a neo-Nazi to be president. And I would say, please don't punch me again.
The whole climate crisis, as they call it, is not only fake news, it's fake science. There is no climate crisis. There is weather and climate all around the world. And in fact, carbon dioxide is the main building block of all life. That's where the carbon comes from in carbon-based life, which is all life on land and in the sea.
So there was a bill that came up in the House to give disaster relief to Kentucky. And by the way, we've done nothing for Puerto Rico to this day. Why? Well, because, first of all, we don't see it as a part of America, though it is an American territory and everything. There's a whole lot of brown people down there. They don't want to help those guys. So they brought a bill up, you know, to give some money to Kentucky. And they said, the Democrats said, hey, wait. We never took care of Puerto Rico. We should take care of Puerto Rico. And the Republicans said, if you want us to take care of Puerto Rico too, there is no way that we are going to vote for that bill. This is real. Okay. They will help the people of Kentucky. Kind of. Not really. But there's no way that they're going to help those brown folks in that country that ain't America.
I have to borrow the money they need to move forward, and they are interested in paying for the disaster that they just are trying to recover from. And this president is refusing to allow a bill to go forward unless we strip any kind of support for Puerto Rico from it. Puerto Ricans are Americans. That's our territory. These people serve in the military. They've got families who are hurting. And we don't want to give them the disaster relief that we give to the states. That is not right. It is unfair. And the House of Representatives will not pass disaster relief without including Puerto Rico and those other territories, the Virgin Islands included.
Have you heard of Project Blitz? Yay? Nay? Maybe, probably not. So many of the policies that we have talked about led us to this point. The fact that we didn't get our tax return. The fact that those who did get a tax return only had it taken away by their student loans. Those who have to take out student loans when education should be one of those things that's covered. Of course, the teachers. The way we're effing over teachers. And so on and so forth. So many of these policies come from something that you may have never heard of called Project Blitz. I'll fill you in a moment.
don't believe any person is in any office that God has not allowed it to be there.
Some say that if you look at these detention centers, you must not care about these kids.
Well, I do care about these kids. I just don't know what to do, but I've got to put my trust somewhere. I can't solve it, and so I'm trying to believe that the government will do that which is right, because they're ministers of God for righteousness' sake.
Mike Jones, an evangelical Christian from North Carolina, questions whether the jarring images of children at detention centers are even real.
I don't believe it. I think it's all a big lie. Like I said, I don't think that that's happening. I don't think that the people who are so-called being separated are what the news is portraying them to be.
Also in North Carolina, Antioch Baptist Church pastor Kenneth Pardue places the blame squarely on the parents.
Who am I upset with? It's the parents. The parents who bring their children to the border to violate the law.
You're probably sick of me talking about religion on this microphone, especially since I do not do a religious show. Well, if that is your complaint about me, why don't you go ahead and skip ahead about 5 minutes, because I'm about to lay into this. So I remember when Jesus said, you shouldn't take care of the sick. When foreigners show up in your land, you ought to kick them out. When they show up with babies, you ought to put those babies in jail. When they are hungry, you ought to take food from their mouths. I remember when Jesus said all these things. So you would think that a group of folks that said they love Jesus so much, Jesus, you would think that this group of folks would know something about their deity, the man that they're claiming to follow. You know, the man who helped the sick, helped the hungry, helped the homeless. Welcome to the show. You would think that they would know that guy and know what he's about. How do they end up idolizing a man that they believe in, where they believe in all the exact opposite things that he believes in? What we're dealing with right now is a religion that is known a lot more for what it's against than what it's for. Obviously, the way we sold religion to people during medieval times was to tell them that if you don't, you're going to go to hell, and your soul is going to be dined on by the devil, and your children are going to be barbecued, and they're going to be fed to you by the devil. As we know, the hero can only be as good as his nemesis. If we said, Jesus, love you, God wants to welcome you to the kingdom of heaven again, that wouldn't be enough. So we had to have a boogeyman with the hoof feet and the big horns. Otherwise, people aren't going to buy it. And so with that, people buy it. There's an article I read recently about how people are leaving the church in mass. It started out as a trickle, and it's really turned into more of a fire hose as of late. And the folks that are associated, especially with many of the Abrahamic religions, those numbers are getting smaller and smaller all the time. And it's not that they're leaving for other religions. I'm sure that they'll say, oh, leave because they're all becoming extremist Muslims. No, they're not. Actually, a lot of them are becoming unaffiliated because they don't like the homophobia. They don't like the racism. They don't like the concentration camps for children, and they definitely don't like the baby jails. It's insane. So, In God We Trust. This is from the Guardian. These are the bills that Christian nationalists hope will protect religious freedom. That's in quotes. Christian hardliners on the religious right have introduced new bills to impose their values on every one of us in six American states in the opening days of 2019. The early legal moves have been tracked from Alaska to Florida as mostly Republican legislatures make use of off-the-shelf model bills generated by Christian nationalists in a playbook called Project Blitz. So-called In God We Trust bills have already been introduced into Alaska, Kentucky, Missouri, and South Carolina, which, if they become law, would be emblazoned on public buildings, hung in schools, and displayed on public vehicles, including police cars. A bill requiring Florida public high schools to offer Christian Bible study classes has been introduced by a representative, a former exorcist who calls herself the Demon Buster. Similar bills have been introduced in North Dakota and Missouri and Texas. A bill allowing teachers to display the Ten Commandments in classrooms will be considered in the state legislature session. Of course, there's another bill in Texas where they would put you in jail for having an abortion. This is real. This is freedom. This is America. Georgia is expected to pass a Religious Freedom Act, which would give cover to people who run businesses or agencies which provide adoption or foster care services if they refuse to serve LGBTQ people on religious grounds. And in South Carolina, Republican Governor Henry McMaster is appealing to the Trump administration to allow Miracle Hill Ministries to keep its federal funding, even though it refuses to allow non-Christians to use its foster care services. And on and on. The Project Blitz book is a 140-page how-to about what laws that these folks would like to see. And it gets worse. I remember having an argument with a Bernie supporter during the 2016 election. And I said, you know what? You need to come off all the Hillary hate because the Supreme Court. And he said, yeah, I understand the Supreme Court, but... And then diarrhea proceeded to fall from his mouth. And I don't talk to this individual anymore. I haven't cut him out of my life necessarily, but we don't talk anymore. And I imagine he didn't want to talk to me because what I said turned out to be true. It's not just the conservatives have the Supreme Court. Donald Trump has the Supreme Court. And now there's a bill in front of the Supreme Court. They have elected to take it up where it will protect employers who fire people for being gay or transgender. This is real. It protects the employers for discriminating against the gay and transgender community. How do I expect they're going to rule? How do you think I think they're going to rule? They're going to rule to protect the religious bigots. Come on, Melvin, I listen to your show because you're generally so hopeful. Why aren't you bringing any hope to me, Mel? When you sit out democracy, this is the kind of stuff that happens.
When children learn positive online behaviors early on, social media can be used in productive ways and can affect positive change. I do believe that children should be both seen and heard, and it is our responsibility as adults to educate and remind them that when they are using their voices, whether verbally or online, they must choose their words wisely and speak with respect and compassion.
I've always thought that the Be Best campaign was really just a cruel joke. Because how are you going to fight bullying when you're married to not just a bully, like the biggest bully ever. And not just the biggest, but a bully that garnered the votes of 59 million Americans. And you may think, well, he's not really a bully, he's just tough. Isn't tough. He's the biggest snowflake of them all. Such the fragile ego he has that he cannot stand any level of criticism whatsoever. And I know that a lot of folks, largely conservative folks, see that as harmless. I don't understand how bullying persists in society, in our schools, in our churches. I got bullied a lot, not just in school, but in church. In church, I would get harassed in church. They had their reasons. You know, they thought I was a homo. And, of course, one of them probably was and had a thing for me, but he couldn't admit it. So he just gave me a good pounding. Religion. Forgiveness. But when folks look up to a person like that, a person like the president, who is a bully, I don't blame him necessarily. But I blame the folks that do the looking up, too. So it's a story, Oregonian Live, the headline, classmates bullying overweight lead girl, 12 years old. Her name is Brooklyn Marie Brem, leads a 12-year-old girl to kill herself. This according to a suit. So the family is suing for $12 million in damages and $35,000 in funeral expenses because their daughter killed herself largely. Well, I'm sure the bullying came from everywhere because what this one boy did to her that's outlined in the lawsuit, it's not just him. You go to any comment section anywhere on the internet, you will see this kind of talk. I do this thing where I try to leave a positive influence. I remember walking through in the high school. I was walking through an empty classroom to go pick up one of my daughters from an after-school activity, and I saw the big dry erase board. And I picked up the dry erase marker, and I wrote, I can't remember what I wrote. I write nice things, though. I didn't write, "Hail Satan 666. I wrote something nice on the board, you know, and I say, hey, I mean, I'll never know if it did any good, if somebody caught it at the right time, maybe a time when they needed to hear it, you know, if it inspired anybody, made anybody feel good, made somebody laugh. I don't know. But just the fact that it might, I left it there. And I do stuff like that all the time. I still do handwritten letters. You know, I try to leave these things behind all over the place. I not just that I was a nice guy, but I try to spread these positive feelings. And one of the things that I would never, ever, 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 ever say to anyone ever is that they should just kill themselves. And it's not unheard of. You can go to the comment section on the internet and you will see it everywhere. You should kill yourself. You should kill yourself. It's stunning to me that that's a socially acceptable thing to do. And that's what this boy did. And I'm sure he read it online. I'm sure he, that's just the way we talk, man. That's just what we say to people. And I understand that bullying reflects more on the bully than it does on the person being bullied. But it doesn't matter because the hurt, the pain, the one that gets destroyed is the person being bullied. And he said that to her a lot, that she was overweight and unattractive and she should just kill herself. And so she, at 12 years old, went home and hung herself. Do you think that this is okay? Better question. Far better question than that. Who'd you vote for in the 2016 election? Even better, who'd you vote for in the 2018 midterms? Don't tell me whether or not you think it's okay. Tell me who you voted for, and I'll tell you if you think it's okay.
What's going on here? And what did we reporters do in the face of this cable onslaught, this character assassination on an almost nightly basis that led to the election of the most fact-free presidential candidate in American history? Nothing. We did nothing. Because we were trained to say nothing. Good reporters know that they have to let the chips fall where they may, and that criticism comes with the gig. Bring it on. We all know that the loudest squealers are usually the ones we've exposed doing something untoward, and that eventually they'll get their comeuppance. American democracy requires a functioning press that informs voters and creates a shared set of facts. If journalists are going to defend the integrity of their work and the role it plays in a sustaining democracy, we're going to need to start defending our work and fighting back against unfair, ridiculous charges. Every day, we need to do our job, check our facts, strive to be transparent, and say what we're seeing. That's why I'm trying to do here. I've seen a nearly 50-year campaign to delegitimize the media for political means. And I'm going ahead and saying it. Not advocating for a more activist press in the political sense, but simply for a more aggressive one and a more straight-shooting one. It means having a lower tolerance for talking points, a greater willingness to speak in just plain truths. This is happening, I'm telling you. And it means not allowing ourselves to be so spun and not giving guests or sources a platform to spin readers untruths if we know it, even if it angers them. Access isn't journalism's holy grail anymore. It never should have been. Facts are. Be right back.
So that was part of a bit that Chuck Todd did about a year ago now, where he recognized sort of what brought us to this point. Not just with this president, but this Congress, of course, our attitudes towards one another, and said he was going to take this completely different path forward on journalism. You know, I was like, as a guy who gets a lot of airtime, he gives a lot of airtime, and I said, okay, all right. So I cut that audio, and I said, I'm going to hold on to this. And what do I see roughly about a year after I cut that? Nothing. A whole lot of the same. They're still willing to give Dum Dum all the airtime that he wants. They're still willing to watch an empty podium while they wait for him. Of course, he is the president now and not just a candidate. And him, far more than anyone else running for the presidency right now, is getting all of the attention. And he does nutso things on Twitter, which I don't know that we should watch for anymore. But we do, and we waste an awful lot of time doing it. And we miss a lot of the real important things that are going on. And he even went so far as to try to put Herman Cain on the Federal Reserve Board. What the f... And we took that seriously. And we started asking ourselves questions. What do you think Mr. Kane would... Whoa, 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 whoa. A year after that, it's still super easy for this media to be led around by this guy. So there's a guy named Larry Hopkins who decided that he was going to go to the border and round up him some illegals. Took a bunch of his friends down there. They took all their guns and their ammo and their fatigues, and they played army man on the border. Of course, it wasn't legal at all what they did. But they arrested 60. But see, when the people show up at the border, they don't know who these schmucks are. So they allow these dumb rednecks to arrest them. And this guy arrested 6,500 of them before he finally got shut down by Border Patrol. They said, hey, we don't need this. We don't want you doing this. And what you're doing is absolutely freaking illegal. And Larry Hopkins, and this is a bunch of his, you know, racist right-wing buddies that just gathered on the border because they're protecting America. They said, and I quote, that what they were doing was training to assassinate Obama, Hillary Clinton, George Soros, and run right down President Donald Trump's list. They this is real. They said this. Obviously, they're going to get many visits from Secret Service because both of those folks, the first two at least, still have a lot of Secret Service protection. But for those that say, the guns are just about protecting us and protecting America, killing people that you don't like, scaring brown people because you're an effing racist. The fact that folks can't see through this now, still stunning to me. And I'm starting to think that they may never, ever see through it.
How could he allow himself to become the cheerleader of the porn star presidency? Is it that he stopped believing in scripture when he started believing in Donald Trump? I don't know.
So one of the things that I was planning on doing long before he gained any national attention was doing a whole show, or at least half a show, on Mayor Pete. Of course, I took a few weeks off, and during that time, Mayor Pete has exploded. Pete Buttigieg, and everybody knows who he is. But I wanted to give you sort of an update. That's my guy now. Almost ahead of Bernie. Him and Bernie are kind of tied for first. I've still got Elizabeth Warren in my upper bracket. I've still got Kamala Harris. But this is the guy. This is the guy right now. I'm really pulling for this guy. And I want to point something out to the conservatives who are obviously probably freaking out a little about this guy. So Olivia Nuzzi over at New Yorker Magazine wrote an article called Wonder Boy. Pete Buttigieg is a gay Harvard alum, fluent in Gramsci, Joyce Norwegian, and he's the Democrats' folksiest heartland hope. Quoting here, sick of old people? He looks like Alex P. Keaton. Scared of young people? He looks like Alex P. Keaton. Religious? He's a Christian. Atheist? He's not weird about it. Wary of Washington? He's from flyover country. Horrified by flyover country? He has degrees from Harvard and Oxford. Make the president read again? He learned Norwegian to read Erland Lowe. Traditional? He's married. Woke? He's gay. Way behind the rest of the country on that? He's not too gay. Worried about socialism? He's a technocratic capitalist. Worried about technocratic capitalists? He's got a whole theory about how our system of democratic capitalism has to be a lot more democratic. If you squint hard enough to not see color, some people say you can almost see Obama, the inspiring professor. Oh, and he's the son of an immigrant, a Navy vet, speaks 7 foreign languages in addition to Norwegian, Arabic, Spanish, Maltese, Dari, French, and Italian, owns 2 rescue dogs, and plays the goddamn piano. He's actually terrifying. And what mother wouldn't love this guy?
As one of our pastors puts it back home, everyone knows how to come visit us in church before an election. What are you going to do after the election? I believe an agenda for black Americans needs to include 5 things that all of us care about. Home ownership, entrepreneurship, education, health, and justice.
He's a Christian. He's gay. So, hey, liberals, he's gay. Him and his husband would be, you know, Mr. and Mr. Oh, for the conservatives? You don't like the gays? Think of it this way. There would be two white men in the White House, huh? Yeah, I know. I know I'd get you there. I know I mess around when it comes to this stuff, but I think this guy needs a serious look. When I first heard him in an interview on Morning Joe, I was just stunned. I didn't know who he was. I just flipped on the radio and there he was. And I go, whoa. And then I go, wow, what senator, what congressman is this? I thought he was already in office. And then, holy hell, you're running for president and young to boot. Now, who knows where we'll be in a year, but I'm watching this guy do a climb that I never thought I would see somebody like him do. Now, I know for Democrats, there's another problem. We now have three white men at the top of the ticket. Wah, wah. Hey, white men at the top of the ticket, make sure you pick a lady. Because there's lots of ladies running for president. So to balance out that ticket a little bit. I don't like voting for white guys any more than you do. But when they're good, they're good. And if one of them ends up at the top of the ticket, pick you a lady. And of course, ladies, yo, when you end up at the top of the ticket, as you should, Kamala Harris, don't turn away from one of these guys. You know, Bernie, Pete, man, one of these guys would be just great. All right. Try to leave you with a good taste in your mouth. Thank you for being here on the fire you can't put out. I have missed you while I was gone, and I am super happy to be back here. Questions, comments, hate mail, just a general statement or inquiry about the show, you can hit us up, tficpo@gmail.com. We work hard not only to inform and entertain, but to keep an open dialogue with you, the listener. So thank you so much for listening. Rejecting austerity, favor of prosperity, we are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and thank you for listening. This is Melvin, signing off. And now that I have woken you up, stay woke! Stay woke, ladies and gentlemen. Good morning.